What's up, everybody? This is Healing Intentions, and I'm your host, Dr. Adrian Mometi. This podcast is about natural health and wellness, mental health, cannabis, psychedelics, philosophy, and spirituality. Today, my guest is Mike Gavoni. Mike is passionate about helping people in recovery experience greater healing and transformation. As a person in recovery for over 16 years, Mike has personally walked this path and knows what it takes to not only recover, but to heal. Mike has overcome what he calls Mount Everest-like hurdles such as childhood trauma, addiction, and chronic illness that lead him to having a profound spiritual awakening that he believes was the catalyst to his healing. Mike has extensive experience working in the addiction recovery field. His experience includes supporting three major hospital emergency rooms in Boston for the opioid epidemic as a recovery coach, helping patients with substance abuse and related complications. Today, Mike has a thriving private practice as a trauma-informed recovery coach, where he believes helping people create a feeling of safety and connection within their own body is essential to becoming well and achieve long-term recovery. Mike believes in addressing the whole person, not only to achieve greater freedom and abstinence from substances and harmful habits, but to empower clients with tools and resources to meet everyday life with more inner resilience, presence, and ease. Let's get started. All right. Welcome, everybody, to another episode of Healing Intentions. This is your host, Dr. Adrian Mometi. I have a very special guest today, somebody that I have not met in person, but through the divine orchestration of the universe, we got connected through my good friend, Justice Renton, was hiking in Sedona, Arizona. And happened to meet Mr. Mike here and his now wife. And so just amazing and super, super grateful to have you on the show, Mike.
Yeah, Adrian, thanks for having me. And I don't think there's any coincidences that we found each other. And I know we both have a person we know in commonality, which is Dr. Epstein, which is also naturopathic doctor. Yeah, so it's great to be here.
Awesome, man. Yeah, no, we have a couple of commonalities. And we were just talking before the show, you live in Sedona, Arizona, and I've never even been there, which is crazy because it's like the metaphysical capital of the country or whatever. I've, you know, heard things like that and energy vortexes and all these cool things. And I'm just a few hours away and I haven't been there yet, but I think everything is for a reason. And when I do go, it'll be exactly the time that I'm meant to be there. So hopefully that's in October here coming up, as we were talking about, to meet up with yourself and Dr. Paul Epstein, who I haven't seen in a few years, and it would be awesome to catch up with. And yeah, man, he's one of those guys that got me going down this path of the whole mind-body connection, and, you know, would really emphasize that over and over and over again. Hey, Adrian. Supplements and nutrition and all that stuff is great. Who's talking about the mental, emotional? Who's talking about you had an alcoholic father and how was that, you know, in your childhood and all the tough things? Like, who's talking about that stuff? And I just never forget his East Coast energy that he brought to it all. So yeah, man. So why don't we start off with just a little background on yourself, Mike, and tell us about what you do, how you got into it, and, you know, your path to this point, and in a nutshell.
Yeah, for sure. So I work as an integrative practitioner myself, supporting people in recovery primarily from substance abuse to experience deeper healing and transformation. And I got on this path, Adrian, really because I was blessed with a lot of suffering. And as you know, Dr. E teaches, you know, pain is opportunity to awaken consciousness. And whether it's pain of addiction, whether it's emotional pain, whether it's pain of disease, you know, can we allow and listen to our pain so we can begin to see what it's saying to us? And I was blessed with what I call Mount Everest-like hurdles. I had a very difficult childhood, so childhood trauma. That then led to addiction, chronic illness, because as we know, you know, the issues are in the tissues, the pain and the trauma are stored in the viscera in the body. and that led to disease. And then I could say my fourth chapter would be spiritual awakening. So I was gifted with these beautiful pain points that have taught me a lot of lessons. And that's how I got into the work I'm in today. There was one day where, you know, I thought I was going to be some real estate mogul, and who knows, you know, I still own property. I like real estate, but my trajectory of my passion and my intention and purpose has changed because of the pain and the suffering that I've had to overcome. And I think our pain can really cultivate something deeper within us, like compassion, self-compassion, deeper understanding, different way of looking at the world when we're ready to pay attention, when we're ready to look at it, when we're ready to investigate it. So let's put it this way. The knock at the door was loud enough for me to have to answer it. And that was through illness. And that's what led me to do the work I do today.
Wow. Yeah. Well said. And like we, you know, Dr. E says, and heard it many places, pain is a teacher. You know, that pain is there to teach us something. It's just whether we're ready to listen or not, and ready to, you know, take the action and apply those lessons in our life. And really interesting how you said you were kind of had these visions of becoming this real estate mogul, and now your career is a bit different than that. And I can really relate, because I went into undergrad as a finance major, and I was like, I'm going to make a lot of money. I don't want to be old and be a doctor like I always wanted to be in my life. I switched careers, and I, you know, got more short-term minded and about the money and about, I want to, you know, do this and forget about being a doctor. And I did that path for a little bit, but then the life took me right back to the path of a different way of a different kind of a doctor with natural healing, and kind of putting all of those things together now, you know, all my life experiences and everything to make me who I am now today and what I can offer to the world. So that's really awesome, man. And how you kind of applied all those tough lessons, like you said, the knock came at the door and you're ready to answer it.
Yeah, I think we all get a call too. We all get the call, maybe as Joseph Campbell would say, you know, and the hero's journey. And as like you said, there was part of you that wanted to be this finance guy, but inside something was still calling you to come back to being a doctor. Is there a bigger thing at play here? I mean, I don't know, but it's like, if we don't listen to ourselves, that real, true, authentic self, boy, do we suffer. And it's really about just checking in. And sometimes, at least for me, you know, I've had to bang my head along a lot of signposts along the way for this guy to listen. And finally, I had to listen, and it was the greatest thing that ever happened.
Yep. That's amazing. So the topic of addiction is, it can be controversial. It's so deep. There's a lot of, you know, theories around it and different approaches to it. What is your take on what addiction is all about? What does it really come down to in what you've kind of seen in your work?
Yeah, I really think an addiction is a response. It's a response to pain. It's a response to trauma. It's a response to the emptiness and loneliness that we feel inside. And, you know, it is a complex topic. And, you know, there's many parts to it. You know, we can look at genetics. You know, is it genetic based? Well, once again, through epigenetics, you know, like 1% of our genetics show our destiny. But it's like, you know, with addiction, can we be predisposed to having genetics that allow that to birth? Sure. But once again, how were we treated? Like you said earlier, was your mom an alcoholic? Was your dad an alcoholic? Did you experience severe trauma? How was your attachment and your relationships? And I think from my experience, and my own personal experience, is an addiction was an attempt to escape the pain. It was an attempt to feel okay in my skin. And it led to doing things with people, places, things that, you know, weren't good for me. And yet I think many addicts, you know, even in recovery, beat themselves up for what they did when they can't see the bigger picture, which was, you know, as Dr. He would say, how is your biography linked to your biology? Right? What is about the story that you grew up in, the story that you lived through, and how it lives on in your body, whether it's, you know, mental health, whether it's addiction, whether it's chronic illness. It's like, you know, so for me, I think an addiction is a response. It's a maladaptive response to pain. And I think when we begin to do our deeper healing work, it's not that I think, I know, because I'm living it. When we do our deeper work and we heal the trauma, which in my case, or in any case, I'm speaking of the activation, the dysregulation that's in your nervous system, when you begin to restore that nervous system to balance and coherence, you don't find yourself searching around for everything. Now, we can even like go a little bit deeper, like, because this is a great topic and one that I kind of live on the edge with, which is once an addict, always an addict. I'm not sure about that, you know, like, So I know your podcast is super open and you said, if you're closed-minded, you know, you probably wouldn't fit on this thing. So I'm extremely open-minded and I'm in the point in recovery where I kind of want to talk real vulnerably and openly, if I may, on the show. Please. I've explored with plant medicine and MDMA assisted psychotherapy. I don't smoke THC cannabis, but I smoke, you know, CBD flower sometimes to relax. Mm-hmm. And do I find myself, you know, looking for MDMA every week? No. Do I find myself looking for ayahuasca or, you know, psilocybin mushrooms? No. Do I think these can be profound tools for people to experience healing? Absolutely. So addiction's a response to pain. We threw a little psychedelics in there and these modalities to support people to heal from that trauma. And I think that's what it's all about, is the healing from that addiction is really discovering your wholeness before what happened to you.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Right. And there's many paths, one truth, right?
Yeah. Dr. E, paths are many, truth is one, therapies are many, healing is one.
and nobody's saying everybody's got to do psychedelics, everybody's got to do this, everybody that. There's many, many paths to that truth of finding that wholeness within yourself. But for many people, they've become a pretty powerful tool in assisting that awareness and awakening. And it's just like, you know, the classic psychedelics, LSD, psilocybin mushrooms, ayahuasca, all of these things. They are inherently non-addictive. These are not things that you're going to, you know, when you have these big experiences, you're not going to go back like the next day looking for more of that. You're going to take some time to integrate what just happened and what you just experienced, you know, for a while. And they're not addictive. They're quite opposite, that you don't want to be doing them often. And that's kind of the whole point, is that every so often it's kind of like a, you know, check in, kind of see where you're at with your healing, with your growth, and then continue on the path. And then eventually, ideally, right, where you don't need anything externally and it's all within. And that's what all these substances are trying to teach us ultimately, is that, hey, all of this is possible naturally. You know, that whole analogy of walking up the mountain is like with the meditation and the breath work and all of that. It's all possible. It's just walking up the mountain one step at a time. Psychedelics are just that helicopter ride to the top of like, yo, this is what's possible up here. Now go back and do the work yourself. You know, it's not doing the work for you. That's the key.
Absolutely. And I think one gift that was given to me was the biggest spiritual awakening and transformation I experienced wasn't with psychedelics. It was through meeting my suffering within stillness, suffering so deeply that I didn't know if I was going to live, and being in that tension birthed a beautiful awakening experience, a mystical experience, and I wasn't on psychedelics. And if we look at the Buddhist, there's according to the Buddhist and Tao traditions, there's four doorways into spiritual awakening: death, meditation, tantric sex, and trauma. So I entered through two of these doorways. The trauma at the end of the day was in my body, irritable bowel disease, multiple chemical sensitivity, and it caused my amygdalas, the fight or flight response in my brain, to be stuck on. And I was, you know, in a despairing fight or flight response to the point where I wanted to commit suicide. And instead of looking outside of myself for, you know, drugs and things of that nature, I went inward through the practice of meditation, and I had a profound spiritual experience. And once again, like you said, I was like, oh my God, it reorganized the whole trajectory of my life and how I saw the world. And that, in that moment, it was tremendously healing. And if you look at the beautiful work of Joe Dispenza, Dr. Joe Dispenza, he's no better. There's no better man that explains this than him. Like, that's what happened. And literally my cells begin to respond. Irritable bowel disease begin to leave, right? Yep. Multiple chemical sensitivity began to tame down, and I began to heal just by shifting my consciousness.
100%. And that's that mind body connection. And, you know, it makes sense. Multiple chemical sensitivity, meaning that like you would get super sensitive extremely from multiple different chemicals. And that can be a tough, you know, illness to deal with for sure. But why would your body be responding that way? You know, it's like, what's really going on? Is it the chemicals or is it deeper than that? It's like, why is your body specifically responding to those chemicals that way?
Yeah, for sure. And that is that's a question that I still don't know all the answers to, but I can tell you one thing. When I went into the doctor's office with a colon that was fully ulcerated, I got diagnosed with universalis ulcerative colitis. The doctor didn't put his arm around me and say, "Hey, Michael, tell me what you lived through. How did your whole colon get ulcerated at 25 years old?" I can tell you, Adrian, that that didn't happen. But if I told you my story in my childhood, you might say, "Oh, well, I could see why there might be a few ulcers in that colon of yours." So once again, the disease turning to disease, the imbalance, right? When we're stuck in a fight or flight or dorsal vagal shutdown response, you might call that depression, anxiety, overwhelm. When that's my day-to-day inhabitants, right, then I'm sending all these pro-inflammatory signals to my body. I'm sending all these, not as in me, as I'm doing something bad, or you. It's this is just what happens. This is the nature of trauma. And then we become inflamed. We have, you know, we get diagnosed with all these pathologies and bipolars and da da da. But meanwhile, what's the story? What happened?
Yep. It's you know, as a lot of people know by now, inflammation is the cause of pretty much everything. But what's the cause of the inflammation? And we know it's multiple things, right? Our lifestyle, our diet, our sleep, our, you know, hydration, and all of these things. But lots of people can do those things, and honestly, those things can be easier. You can take care of the diet and work out and all those things, but that's sometimes done as, like Dr. E says, is like, "Oh, that's fine, that's fine." But we're ignoring like the big elephant in the room, which is, how's your mental emotional health? How's your spiritual health? That's fine, eat all the healthy food, but if you're not taking care of that, you will have issues still in some way or another. And I've seen that time and time again in my short career already. And from the elders and, you know, greats that I've learned from, I mean, you know, their whole 30, 40 year career is just one patient after another of that story. It's just, you know, it's a really evident link there that either you see it or you don't. You know, like, once you see, you can't unsee.
Absolutely. And if your thoughts are primarily based in fear, right, and you're constantly living like there's a lion chasing you, and your body's in that sympathetic go, you can't heal. Your body can't function properly. You have to engage the relaxation parasympathetic aspect of the nervous system for the body to return to homeostasis. That's why if you keep, you know, eating the good foods and the supplements, but you don't shift the consciousness of the individual, then yes, I'm sure it makes a difference and they will be making progress, but mind as healer, mind as slayer, right? There's a great book, Mind as Healer, Mind as Slayer. So I think Dr. Porter, he said something like negative or self-talk can change over 2,300 genes or something. I don't know the exact number, but it was amazing to say, oh my God, like self-talk alone can trigger that many genes. It was just phenomenal. So yes, how are you relating to your inner world? How are you relating to your outer world? And have you done your deeper work so you can find the present moment and not be chased by all these lions that are probably not even there, but maybe memories and remembrances of the past.
Mm-hmm. Yep. Yep. And we live in this sympathetic dominant world, you know, stress, and you look at the news and it's all just fear and it's all just, you know, go, go, go. We got to go. We're in a rush and traffic and oh my God, got to work, got to work. And it's like, you know, another thing Dr. E said that I got from him, we're human beings, not human doings.
You know? Yeah, that was, yeah, totally. I get it too. Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Yeah.
So what are your favorite things to do to put yourself back in that parasympathetic dominant mode? I know there's so many things, but what do you like to do and what do you like to recommend for people?
Yeah. So I think one of the most powerful things you can do is build a relationship with your breath. This process of breathing is this very autonomic process that keeps this body alive. You know, when people say the breath of life, that's life. And there are some people that live a whole lifetime without even taking a mindful breath. Now, when you become a meditator, I hope you all become meditators. You know, you're engaged with your breath and you're using your breath as an anchor for attention. And in that process, you're connecting with life again, and you're restoring the balance between mind and body. And the breath is the bridge between the unconscious and the conscious, right? The breath, the body breathes itself. But when you bring mindfulness to it, you can begin to settle the mind and you can begin to see things as they are. So where I'm going with this is breath is key. And if you can begin to develop some sort of self-awareness meditation practice, that's it, man. Like the yogis knew all this wisdom, you know, thousands of years ago, just from the processes that still live on today. That all this stuff is rooted in, and it's beautiful, and it's timeless wisdom, and to awaken that wisdom within us is just a beautiful thing. And the breath is really the, you know, from relaxation to full liberation, it will take you. So the breath is key, and really nature is key too. You know, forest bathing, connecting with the trees, connecting with nature. Nature heals.
Awesome. Awesome. Yeah, I agree. And another really simple one that I like that is along those same lines is that cold exposure. You know, it's all about that balancing of the autonomic system and that sympathetic, you know, dominance that we're in. When you give yourself that cold, you know, blast, it really does wonders to help to balance out that autonomic nervous system and, you know, get your blood flow moving, and it directs all the blood into your inner organs and, you know, gets your lymph moving. And it's just unbelievable. At the end of your shower, you know, you take your normal hot shower at the end of your shower for 30 seconds or a minute, you know, just turn it to cold. And wow, I mean, just that simple practice, what it can do for you, you know, and obviously the breath through that.
Yeah, you need your breath for the cold, huh? Or else you don't stand a chance. Wim Hof will tell you, you know, when you get out there in the ice and you got to use that breath, because that breath is really, you know, doing so many different processes, including help finding that balance and that rhythm there to stay the course in the cold, or else you just check out. But I actually did my first cold plunge here not too long ago with Troy Casey. I don't know if you guys know him. He's an interesting guy. He's a certified health nut. And we befriended each other out here. We're neighbors, and it was great. The cold was fabulous. It was challenging. It sat me right down. Like, you got to be there. You got to be in the moment with the cold, or else, you know, it's taking you over. So yeah, so many different, you know, health benefits from that as well. And saunering, hot can be good too. You know, mm-hmm. Sauna is one of the things that I do in my self-care practice too. So yeah, hot and cold therapy is great.
Awesome. I wanted to get your perspective on, you know, the way that addiction is viewed, the way that addiction treatment is, and just the whole, you know, drug policy. You know, I really am a fan of harm reduction over prohibition, because prohibition just doesn't work, as we've seen, you know, over time and over history. So instead of locking people up in prison that clearly need medical help with addiction, you know, wouldn't it be better to get them the help they need, not treat them as criminals, and not fill up, you know, our prisons with simple drug crimes, non-criminal drug crimes? And, you know, I think that's like 50% of the prisons is simple drug possession. It's just absolutely crazy. You know, what's your thoughts on all of that?
Yeah, so I think there's a lot there, obviously. You know, changing the system is something that is desperately needed. As it relates to the incarcerated men and women who are in there, I would say high 90s are traumatized individuals that probably don't even know that they're traumatized, or what trauma is, or even how it lives on in them.
Right.
There's a prison project going on. I forget the name of this woman, but she does the circles, and she brings a compassionate inquiry type modality to the prisoners. And it's beautiful to see. You know, for example, she has everyone stand in a circle, and she says, okay, if you had a mother and father that would divorce, step in the circle. If you had, if you were physically, you know, assaulted from a parent, step in the circle. And everyone's just stepping in. And it's amazing. At the end of the day, they look all around, and they're all more alike than not alike. And they've all been traumatized. So, you know, I never went to prison. And I was fortunate. I did activities that probably could have led me there, some small, you know, drug dealing and so forth when I was in my, you know, late teens and so forth. Not proud of that today. But I was traumatized. My buddies who went to prison are traumatized, you know, and to really begin to look at them like human beings, I think, is a great first step. And to begin to meet them with a sense of compassion and teach them and educate them about trauma. Right? Teach them about trauma and how it resides in their nervous system, how these protector parts show up, right? If you want to talk about protector parts, I mean, just look at a prison. You have to be in a protector part to survive there. And that's a trauma response in itself. So really treating these guys with compassion, educating them, you know, we have to obviously change some policies around, you know, drug policies and so forth like that. But it's, yes, we have to begin to look at the person and understand that there's a lot of layers happening, and it is complex. I don't have the answer to it in this moment, but just really meeting them and treating them as a person is a wonderful step. Now, I worked in three major hospitals in Boston, emergency room for the opioid epidemic. And I would go in there kind of undercover and really work this mind body. And it was beyond my mind, some of the things that I witnessed, where these doctors had no idea what was actually going on with these patients, but just overlooked them as human beings and just bodies that were taking up beds in their emergency room. And it was really terrible to see that. So I would kind of come in, I would meet them. Some of them, if it was appropriate, I would ask them, you know, tell me a story a little bit, what happened? And Adrian, you wouldn't even believe the stories I heard. I'll share one in particular with you. 72-year-old woman, chronic alcoholic, I said, you know, how'd you get in here at 72 drinking booze? Long story short, you know, her husband, the love of her life, went to Vietnam, and his head was, he was decapitated by a rotor blade of a helicopter. And then, you know, so that was very painful. Her daughter, she had a daughter, she met a guy who was an alcoholic. You know, her daughter, her jacket got stuck in the MBTA train. She got dragged by the train and smashed into a concrete post. So she was taking care of her daughter. So long story short, she was dealing with all these traumas. And I said to her, I said, this is enough to make someone drink, right? Like, you know, or I'd ask them, do you know why you're shooting heroin with three pairs of sweatpants on running around Boston Common? And they would look at me and have no idea. And I would say, you're shooting heroin because you're in pain. And then they would look at me like a deer in the headlight and go, oh my God, yes. So going back to people who incarcerated, going back to, you know, people who are in our emergency rooms, they're trauma victims. They need support. They need to be looked at as a human being. And we need to start bringing in a sense of compassion for them as humans.
Yeah, well said. I agree with everything you said. And it's interesting, you know, you mentioned about being in prison as a trauma itself. You know, one thing I also learned from Dr. E is the ACE studies, the adverse childhood event studies, that are fascinating when you look into those and how much it affects us in our adulthood. If you've had this, as you can look it up, it's an ACE questionnaire, adverse childhood events. And you answer those questions. And one of them is, has anybody in your family, your parent, been in prison before? Because it's that impactful on you in terms of trauma. And your score on the ACE questionnaire, the higher you score, the higher likelihood you have of all diseases, like all cause mortalities. I mean, it's mind blowing. It's mind blowing to look at those studies. And it, you know, what's really interesting too, is it's not just what happened to you, but then the whole resiliency that comes from it, and the resiliency questionnaire that, you know, accompanies that. And not only what happened to you, but how resilient were you able to be in the face of that? Because you can have two, you know, sons with a alcoholic father. One, you know, turns out just fine and it says, I'll never be like my dad because he's alcoholic. And the other one turns out alcoholic and says, well, it's because of my dad, you know. So it's all about the resiliency and how you respond to what happened to you. So that's something that's super, super interesting that I highly recommend everyone check out. And if you have anything to add to that.
Yeah, the ACE questionnaire is amazing. And it's a study of 17,000 participants, adverse childhood experiences. And I'll give you a quick stat. Like Adrian said, 10 questions. If you score six, compared to those who score zero, you are 4,600 more times likely to use drugs intravenously. Whoa. And just like you said too, all cause mortality, right? Emphysema, diabetes, heart disease, all these conditions. And there it is. There's the biography biology link of you know, what was your childhood like, and Did you develop early onset disease? I was on my way. I had cognitive issues. I had irritable bowel disease. I had multiple chemical sensitivity. And all of that is due to trauma. I think I scored seven aces on the A score. So that's pretty high, you know, and it's amazing. And it is reversible though, I want to say. When you start to take care of yourself and you start to do the healing work, it's amazing what can happen. But yes, adverse child experiences, I recommend people check that out and really see the link.
Mm-hmm, definitely. And I also wanted to share too, just to tag on to what you said earlier about, you ask a, you know, a heroin user why they use it, and they're just like, you know, but I did do this rotation at Salvation Army and in Chicago, in downtown Chicago, and you know, during school, naturopathic medical school, and it was awesome. And, you know, we saw a whole different patient population there, you know, a lot of addiction and a lot of, you know, homelessness and things that we wouldn't have seen on our, you know, suburban campus, you know, at the school. And I remember one guy, he had been homeless for 8 years and addicted to heroin for 8 years. and he was in there and I was his intern and I was, you know, talking with him and he had an awareness of, you know, he'd done some work and some therapy and whatever. And he's like, you know, what I realized, it's not about the drugs. It never had anything to do with the drugs. It was all the pain I was feeling, all the trauma. And it was being used. I was using that to cover it up and to numb myself and to try to, you know, run away from it because the pain was so bad. And so that was what the drugs were about. And I was like, wow, I'll never forget that.
Yeah, it's powerful. Dr. Summer was on my show and he said he wrote an article and it actually got published. Its title is it's not the drugs, it's the ACEs.
Mm-hmm.
So it's not the drugs, it's the adverse childhood experiences. So mm-hmm. Yeah, there's a big link. And I think, you know, I think where I get really excited is that healing is possible too. You know, healing is possible no matter what your story is. You know, the body is amazing. And when you begin to take care of yourself and begin to nourish it and give it what it needs, it comes back to life. And I think most importantly, when we get the support we need from others, right? Like yourself, good doctors, good practitioners, people that are open-minded to say, hey, you know, maybe psychedelic assisted therapy can support you on your journey. You know, for me, I needed all the bells and whistles. You know, I think I told you earlier, I healed irritable bowel disease from a fecal microbial transplant, mm-hmm. right? Who would have thought, you know, putting someone else's poop in me would stimulate my immune system and my gut microbiome. I mean, it's just amazing. And yep. The beautiful point where I was at that point where, yeah, you know, to my buddy as a donor, please, I need that. And it's like, you know, you never know where you're going to go with this, you know. I was going to go, you never know where you're going to go with this shit. You know, no pun intended, but it, you know, it's like,
pun intended.
It's crazy. Yeah.
Oh yeah. No, it's so true. That's why it's so important to keep an open mind and an open heart. And you never know where the healing will come from. And that's what it's about. Like we are self-healing. Our bodies are meant to heal as long as we give them the tools that are necessary. And as long as we're in alignment with nature and with ourselves and removing all those blocks and, you know, those traumas and those things can be healed. And I believe we can heal from just about anything if the belief is there.
Beautiful. Yeah. So there's that big mind part of it. Like, can you believe you can heal?
Mm-hmm.
Right. Like stepping into I'm healed already. Like while you're going through whatever you're going through, I'm healed, right? Like saying that to yourself, confirming that, affirming that every day, you know, and that's the power of the mind body connection, that you're what's Deepak Chopra say, your cells are eavesdropping on your thoughts, you know?
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. I love that. How do you feel about like with AA and all of those, you know, programs where it's like, hey, my name is Mike and I'm an addict. Like, is that kind of reinforcing that? Like, do you not agree with that type of talk about addiction?
Yeah, I love this topic. Thanks for asking, Adrian, because I got sober in 12-step. And if you're in 12-step and you're listening to this, you know, beautiful. It's a great place to start your journey. And I think a lot of the verbiage is outdated. It needs a revamp. And I think, yes, if you're confirming or affirming you're an alcoholic day in and day out, I think that's not useful to you. I think if you're early in recovery, it can be useful in the sense of getting honest with yourself and accepting what's here, mm-hmm. right? As Dr. E would say, it's the truth that liberates, not your effort to be free. Okay, here I am. I got this problem with booze, drugs. I need some help. But I'm an alcoholic. Is that really who you are? Right. And then I think that's where the spiritual journey comes in. Right. Mm-hmm. Because I didn't know who the hell I was either for a long time until I got kind of beyond this. Let's just say I got quiet And I got to see a little bit more of what's here than just this proliferation of thinking. Now we're talking into the spiritual journey, which is also in AA, which is beautiful, right? The 11 steps, sought through prayer and meditation to improve our conscious contact with God as we understood him. So the meditation is actually in there. And, you know, to take it to another level is Bill Wilson. If you want to get into the link in psychedelics, you know, Bill Wilson was into psychedelics, specifically acid with all the psychonauts, you know, back in the day. There's a great book called Distilled Spirits. I forget the author right now, but he wrote all about it. And, you know, so Bill was a big component of having using psychedelics to have a spiritual experience. But saying I'm an alcoholic day in and day out and really affirming of that's who you are, I think is a total delusion.
Yeah, that's what I would say from what I hear about it. I mean, I'm no addiction expert. I certainly don't know the 12 step. I've never been through it, but yeah, that's what I've read about it. And I don't really like the sound of continuously affirming daily something you're trying to heal from, you know, and move past and kind of not identify with anymore. Cause that's a problem. I see a lot of people become identified with their illnesses and they don't know how to separate. It's like, no, I have fibromyalgia. Like, that's me. I am fibromyalgia. Like, no.
Exactly, right? Yeah, as Dr. E would say, you know, I can treat the cancer, the fibromyalgia, but the I is the most challenging part of it. So exactly. And when I say that, like I've posted on my Instagram and so forth about like, you know, is saying you're an alcoholic or addict really serving you? And I always get a couple comments. Oh yeah. Yeah. Like, you know, who are you to say this and that? And I'm like, and there it is. Like when they hold that defense space, it just shows me that they're still that much identified with that. And that's okay. Like that's where you're at. But yeah, even, you know, the cancer, right? You know, I also did another podcast with Dan Hegerich, who was a 6-time cancer survivor. And he's like, I literally had to let go of that idea of me being connected to cancer. And that's how powerful, you know, we are when we can affirm something like that, that our you know, that it stays with us, that we become it, that we keep living with those symptoms rather than moving beyond it. And honestly, there was a day where I forgot about IBD. I forgot about irritable bowel disease. I was so in my groove of healing, I forgot about being sick.
Yep. And then you stepped into this new reality of healed Mike, which you made possible through the Joe Dispenza, you know, quantum shift into that reality, which I think is what it's all about. And you know, to shout out to somebody that Dr. E probably knew. He's no longer with us, Dr. Jim Sensenig, but he is out in Connecticut or was in Connecticut. And he said this quote that's one of my favorites. There are no incurable diseases. There are only incurable patients. And I think that's what it comes down to. Again, that I, it's like they're not able to, you know, release from that. And so they don't get cured and that's okay too. You know, not every, you know, meet people where they're at. And that's what we're taught over and over and over again. Not everybody is ready to heal right now. And so, you know, that's what it's about. And also going back to what you're saying about the spiritual journey, I think in a nutshell, what does that mean? Getting out of your head and the thoughts that we identify with. You know, you are not your thoughts, and getting out of your head and dropping down into your heart and whatever that means, you know, for you and the deeper meanings and where what resides in our heart. And really, it comes down to get out of the fear and get into the love. And love is really, you know, if I had to put it in one word of what this is all about, it's love and gratitude.
Yeah. And those are high frequencies to be it. I was just looking for a book on my bookshelf while you were talking. It's called The Power of Awareness by Neville Goddard, which it's a phenomenal book. I reference to it in the past about the whole identification of things like alcoholic or illness or whatever. And there's a quote in there, not that I'm a big Bible quoter, but about Ephesians that, you know, whatever is made manifest comes to light, and whatever follows the I am, we become or remain the same. Right. Jesus talked a lot about I am the truth, the light, and the way. I am. So just to go back for a moment, you know, instead of saying I am an addict, you could say I am a loving presence that had a problem with alcohol, right? Or whatever it may be. But instead of being identifying to that as this very rigid, you know, very small space of alcoholic. I mean, that is not who we are. We are divinity in this flesh. And to talk about that spiritual is, yes, Adrian, I never knew I wasn't my thoughts until there was so much suffering that I had to analyze what was here. And whatever gets you to come to the present moment is beautiful. But as Thich Nhat Hanh says, you know, no mud, no lotus. What does that mean? Well, the lotus needs the mud to grow, right? If you literally, I've done it before, not proud of it, but I don't know. I took a lotus out of the swamp and I put her in a little glass of water on my desk. She was done in literally like 20 minutes. And I was like, oh my God, but the lotus needs the mud to stay alive, the murky, deep mud, or to bloom, I should say. And we need that whatever that friction is, to get us outside of ourselves, to awaken to the present moment. And often it comes in what we think is the most challenging situation in our life. But once again, pain is opportunity. Pain is teacher, right? Going back to the beginning. And we can always stop and tune in and get out of what's going on in this monkey mind and really touch into the present moment. Because I don't know about you, but I mean, I'm fortunate to live in Sedona, but really the earth is beautiful wherever you are. There's the miracles and the wonders of life all around us. The dragonflies, the hummingbirds, the hawks, you know, the cardinals. I mean, if you stop and really look what's going on out here, I mean, it is just epic, you know. As Thich Nhat Hanh would say, the kingdom of God is in the present moment. So that's to be, or Eckhart Tolle, to be spiritual is to be in the moment, you know, is to get out of the thinking mind or identification with that and touch into what's here. Now, when you say the heart, you know, I follow a Buddhist path and it's very much the two wings of the bird, which are the heart and the mind. And can we awaken that heart? And that heart is really powerful. In fact, when I had a spiritual experience, I had a heart opening, which oh my God, I didn't know what was going on, but I remember the clearest day, I saw a guy with his walker, he was blind. And at that moment, my heart was so wide open because I was going through so much suffering that I was having the compassion for these other beings that were suffering too. And that's what compassion means, to really suffer with. And my heart was totally open. And this guy with his stick just trying to find his way down the road. And I like burst into these tears because I was like, oh my God, this guy's just trying to make it. He's just trying to get somewhere. And I have eyeballs to see. And this guy can't even see. And so when we get in touch with the truth of what's here, right? Forget about fighting with each other and Asian and Black and white and Hispanic. And we're all one. We're all connected. We're all this consciousness. And when we begin to, you know, take time to slow down, or maybe you have an amazing psychedelic journey that unites you with everything, then it's beautiful. And that's what changes that's where the healing is. It's the change in the perception, how we see. Sorry, I got really excited there for a moment.
No, please don't apologize. That was amazing. I just want to let you roll for another 20 minutes. Yeah, exactly, man. You said it. That was well said. And, you know, it's funny what you mentioned earlier about the four ways to awakening: meditation, trauma, tantric sex, or death. Well, isn't it funny and coincidental that psychedelics layer their way in through there, through pretty much all four of those things? Because check it out. Like I said on your podcast, everybody experiences a psychedelic in life. It's called death. But psychedelics are an opportunity, you know, taking a substance is an opportunity to experience death, like an ego death, and then apply those lessons while you're still living. So that's one. Two, meditation. They've done those studies with long-term meditators, you know, 20, 30 years, an hour plus a day. And they did the fMRI scans of their brains and then people on psilocybin mushrooms. And the exact same areas of the brain were lit up. The default mode network, which is our ego, which, you know, makes a whole lot of sense. So it's like, okay, once again, you can get there through years of meditation work, or the psychedelics kind of show you, hey, this is what's possible. Now go do it. So that's another thing. And now the trauma. Psychedelics help to bring up and connect with this trauma that is so deeply stored in our subconscious, in our body, and all of that. And that's what psychedelic literally means, mind manifesting, manifesting the unconscious to the conscious. So that trauma, you know, that's why these experiences can be so intense and so overwhelming for people, because it's years of trauma coming up in a few hours. And boy, that can be uncomfortable, you know, and that's why it's so important to be in the right set and setting and with the right container and therapist and all of those things, and the intention and the integration afterwards and all of that. Because literally that's why people say it's like 10 years of therapy in one session. Well, it's like, well, how is that possible? You know, what a powerful tool that's allowing that to happen. And then the tantric sex, you know, psychedelics and sex certainly go hand in hand, and they can. And, you know, sex can be quite a spiritual experience. And especially a special shout out to MDMA and its ability to completely enliven that. And I mean, really, its use in couples therapy is just unbelievable. I think that'll be huge in the future. So, yeah.
I love how you correlated all those. Yeah, you must have wrote those down when I said them. I love it. Yeah, it's great. And you're spot on. You know, as Carl Jung says, we don't become enlightened by imagining images of light, but by only making the darkness conscious. And that's really what the healing is about, is making those parts of us that are unconscious conscious, and actually releasing the emotion that's tied to those. And that's the beauty that MDMA or ayahuasca or psilocybin or these psychedelics can do for us. And you made a great point too with the default mode network. Now, the default mode network is that's the area of the brain that creates that sense of self. And when we bypass that, right, and we can get more into this, let's just say, deeper awareness and be less identified as this kind of pinpointed me in identification with the stuff, but be the witness of it, we can now shift our perception and be able to see ourselves, what happened to us, in a new light. And that's where, like I said earlier, the healing happens, is really, really shifting that. And not to mention, you know, for example, MDMA therapy, the support it gives you with the oxytocin system. So many of us in recovery, we've been traumatized by the people that are supposed to love us and support us the most, which are our parents. And when we get traumatized as young kids, and that oxytocin, that bonding system, you know, gets fractured. For example, I was split from my mother at 3 years old. So they can only imagine what that did to my nervous system. And the MDMA actually supports that oxytocin system to come on board and for you to feel really loved and supported and nurtured and safe. And you can go to those places that you otherwise cannot go, where those protector parts are like, no, 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 we're not going here. Well, MDMA is like that beautiful veil of love in between there that just allows it to flow. So I totally believe in psychedelic assisted psychotherapy. But once again, like Adrian said, under the right parameters, right? We just don't, you know, especially in recovery, I'm talking to the recovery community just in this moment, is I want to really specify for us, we have to be really careful, because we use these substances to escape. And once again, it comes down to intention. What's our intention behind this? Well, I want to do this MDMA journey to experience what's unconscious and to connect, reconnect with myself and to heal. Okay, great. And when we begin to, you know, use these intentionally in the right context, the right setting, dose, guide, substance, I mean, phenomenal things can happen. And I've seen it, you know, even ketamine. I support people out here in Sedona with Dr. Cunningham, who's an amazing MD. She's a doctor out here and has a ketamine clinic. And I mean, I took my mother from Boston. You want to talk about codependency? Well, you know, part of my work and part of my own healing is trying to stop saving my mother. Well, I've put a lot of effort in, and I've done, it's been great. I've helped her. I think that's part of my karma, and part of it is splitting off from it too. But uh-huh. I brought her out here to Sedona, met her, you know, hooked her up with a bunch of people, including Dr. Cunningham. She did ketamine. And amazing things happened with my mom, and my mom has, you know, deep complex, you know, PTSD, and I've seen amazing things with meditation, with ketamine, with love, right? Love, you know, and just amazing thing. So it's all possible.
Yeah, man. Yeah, absolutely. I don't have any personal experience with ketamine. I've obviously read a lot about it. It's huge. There's centers all over. I'm a big fan of the places that support with the integration after. I think that's key, because there are a lot of places out there that, here's your infusion. Okay, now have a nice day. And it's like, whoa. That's a pretty intense experience. And yeah, it can help people, of course, feel better and less depressed and all these things, but much more effective when paired with that integration and all of the, you know, the therapy and everything with it. And that's why the MDMA studies are going so wonderfully right now, because the way they have it set up is, you know, 3 MDMA sessions, but then therapy before and after, you know, male, female co-therapist team. And I mean, MDMA is literally like the perfect molecule for therapy. It lowers your amygdala, you know, so you're able to not get overwhelmed by the emotions of your traumas, but then still talk about them. And then it increases your prefrontal cortex, so you're able to talk about things and think about things better. And, you know, and it just busts wide open your heart. Your heart chakra is just like, you don't have a choice, but it's, yeah, it's open. And that's why it's getting, you know, 60% cure rates in this treatment resistant PTSD. That is absolutely unheard of, and why it will probably become a legalized substance for therapy in the United States, even before cannabis, which is amazing.
Yeah, it is. It's pretty amazing. I'm glad that you have pioneers like Rick Doblin, the founder of MAPS, the Multidisciplinary Association for Psychedelic Studies, out there doing the work he's doing. And, you know, really the therapist and the framework that they put together is phenomenal. I think the stat is 67% of people after their third dose per se with the therapy, they don't have PTSD anymore. And that's just amazing. I mean, we need more. And obviously there's, like, when we talked about this earlier on my show, is you know, we have a cannabinoid system for a reason. We have, you know, these systems that can, you know, take this fungi and break it down and, you know, turn it into other chemicals. So we have these effects. You know, I just read this this thing about dolphins, and dolphins, I guess, antagonize puffer fishes. The puffer fish, you know, that's full of venom, and they they get it to release its venom, and then they swim through it because the venom gets them stoned, and they swim around, and the dolphins do this on purpose to get a buzz off the puffer fish, which I thought was like phenomenal. So, you know, nature plays around, but I really believe that these are sacraments from the divine. And if you read books like The Immortality Key, Stealing Fire, I think Stealing Fire, great book. But yeah, just this new frontier of psychedelics and healing, it's really phenomenal.
Absolutely. And I just finished reading Michael Pollan's newest book, This Is Your Mind on Plants. And he talks about opium, mescaline, and caffeine as consciousness changing, you know, plants and coffee and tea, you know, most popularly, like widely consumed plants in the world. And they change our consciousness. They do. And people become quite addicted to those things, right? And it's something we just gloss right over. Oh, yeah, whatever. Oh, yeah, morning coffee. How do people talk? How do they sound when they talk about their coffee if they didn't get it that morning? They sound like an addict, right?
So or, like, or if you took too much like me this morning, you're like, you get all wrapped up.
Exactly. So it's very, very interesting when we talk about changing consciousness and what that really means, and our history of it as humans, and just all the stigmas around it. And, you know, it all comes down to the intention once again of these plants have been used for thousands of years. Just in these last 80 to 100 years have we been lied to and all this propaganda and stuff. But if you look into the history, there's a lot of it there. So, and I also want to just shout out the MAPS. I feel this close connection to, because they got started in 1986, the year I was born. So I just feel like this extra, like, you know, I'm an advocate and I'm an activist for everything they stand for, because I just feel like I'm meant for it.
I love it. I love it. And going back to the coffee thing, me and my wife, we got married here in Sedona a few weeks ago. And when I wanted to buy an espresso machine. So we got this beautiful espresso machine. So now I'm in there playing with this coffee and really enjoying it. So I'll totally get it with the whole coffee and even nicotine too. At the right dose, nicotine can be very supportive for cognitive function,
right?
For brain health. So, and that's a whole other area we could dive into on another show, nootropics. And I'm all about, you know, cognitive function, reconnecting the prefrontal cortex. In fact, that's the premise of my work, based in somatic experiencing. And in order to heal from the trauma, healing from the trauma is moving from the limbic subcortical part of our nervous system, fight or flight responses, overwhelmed, to that prefrontal cortex, executive function, decision-making, reasoning, right? When I talk to people about that, it's like, you know, when we talk about decision-making, reasoning, right? Does that have anything to do with drug addiction? Of course it does. Well, you know, for you to have that executive function and reason and make decisions, when that's not online, then you're out in the dark. But coming back to all these beautiful plants and molecules, it's just a fascinating time, I think. And a really shout out to you, Adrian, for what you're doing, you know, and there are so many doctors that lay really low. And yet there's a lot that speak up, but, you know, you're really out there as a pioneer, integrating your naturopathic, you know, background and your knowledge of cannabis and your work with psychedelic integration. And really, I think it's beautiful because this is the forefront. This is where we're going. Like, really, whether you like it or not, like, it's here. I mean, you probably have a dispensary in your town. You know, MDMA therapy could be legal, you know, could be going past, getting passed by the FDA shortly. Mm-hmm. And I'm just, you know, I'm proud of you and everything you're doing, because it's awesome.
Thank you so much, man. Yeah, I realize that what I'm into is a lot of taboo, stigmatized topics. And there's no coincidence there. It all has to do, I think, with my being a Scorpio and being into that, you know, taboo and stuff that's kind of in the shadows, you know, and kind of not talked about. But I've realized that, hey, there's all truth within these things. And all my intention is, like the name of the show, Healing Intentions. And that's my intention. So I have no fear in talking about these things, because I know that they are the future and they will help the entire world shift the paradigm.
Without a doubt. And for me, I'm if you can only imagine too, I'm in the recovery zone, let's just say. And I'm talking about psychedelics, I'm talking about plants, I'm talking about, you know, and these are people that substances have demolished them in their life. And I'm here to say, oh, but wait, a plant or a fungus or a pill might be able to actually support you. So for so long, I was so apprehensive to talk about it, but from my own experience, I know that these are sacraments, and when used in the right context, like you said, they can bring you to the top of the mountain in the helicopter versus, you know, years and years and years of spiritual practice. So it's beautiful. I think we have to continue to be courageous, but also walk that line of professionalism. And most importantly, knowing that our clients, our patients can, or your patients, my clients can really trust us and really know that we have space for them. We're holding space for them. We're compassionate with them. And as Dr. E says, the healing happens in the relationship. It really happens in the relationship. So even when you go do MDMA, if you feel like you couldn't trust the guy supporting you, you would be like, the molecule wouldn't be as effective. But when the therapists are there, co-ed, male, female, and you have a safe, supportive presence, and that molecule's there to open your heart up, and you feel like you can, you know, trust, and you feel like you can explore, then it's just amazing.
Truly amazing. And as one of the, you know, descriptions of psychedelics, they can be ineffable, which means there's no words to describe them. And really, it's hard to put words to some of these experiences. You just have to experience it. You know, I heard someone say one time, it's like, well, how do you describe being in love to somebody that's never been in love? You can't. You have to experience it. How do you describe an orgasm to somebody that's never had one? Well, you just have to experience it. So it's a similar type thing. And if it's the right in time and, you know, you're called to it, like we've talked about all the right precautions and everything around it, certainly a path to explore.
Absolutely. And there are a lot of credentialed professionals in the field of healing that haven't actually done their own healing work. And it's impossible to transmit that healing or to hold that space if you haven't done it yourself. So it's important that docs like you are showing up in circles, and people like me are showing up in circles, and, you know, other professionals are showing up doing their work to actually have that experience. I can't quote verbatim, but Einstein talks about, you know, experience, you know, is you need experience over knowledge, right? Textbooks in university can only get you so far, and it's great and it's beautiful. We need that academia part of it, but we also need the shift in consciousness from the practitioner, the doctor, the healer, the whatever it may be, to help that person cross from one shore to the next.
Absolutely. And it really is true. I heard it so much before, but I really kind of embodied it and felt that more recently. You can only go as deep with someone as you've gone deep within yourself. And it's so, so true. And, you know, as you heal, others heal. And as they heal, you heal. And that's that, you know, we are all one, you know, connection. And as you know, you and I are healing, the whole entire planet's healing. And that's why once we reach that tipping point of consciousness, you know, leveling up, I think that's where we're getting to pretty exciting things around the corner. And I think it's really, really soon here, you know, a lot sooner than a lot of people can imagine. So I'm excited.
I hope so, because it's definitely a challenging time right now. But once again, hey, maybe we're going through the birth canal, and maybe we're birthing a new collective conscious here. So I'm hoping. I'm out here doing my work, and I know you're doing your work. So it's we'll see what happens.
Yeah, man. Well, I think that's a pretty good spot to leave it off. If there's anything else on your mind, Mike, I really enjoyed having you, but love to give you the last word here, and you know, say whatever else is on your mind or on your heart.
Yeah, I think the last thing I just want to say is, you know, at the end of the day, the most important thing we can begin to do is just really check into the here and the now. right? Really just look at our loved ones in the eyes and understand that one day, you know, he or she is going to be gone one day. We're going to be gone one day. And how can we live deeply in the moment and not take what's here for granted, but really just see the beauty and really just maybe hold your loved one's hand, you know, or maybe just do an act of kindness for them. Because one day, you know, we're not going to be here. And to really hold that up front, that teaching of impermanence just brings so much more depth and joy and beauty to your life when you can really hold that in perspective. So, and also, Adrian, thanks for having me. And I hope to see you in Sedona soon.
Yes, man. Wow. Beautiful, beautiful ending there. And thanks, Mike. And appreciate you, man. And I'll see you in Sedona soon.
See you soon.